It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Alright, this goes beyond what grinds my gears and gets into full old man yells at cloud territory here. So, have you seen the latest Old Navy commercial?
No.
It's everywhere now. And it is, like most Old Navy commercials, random celebrity does silly shit. This particular one is Jennifer Coolidge playing a piano around a bunch, like, that moves across the stage as people are in the background wearing, like, Old Navy clothes and things. And she's singing a version of Deck the Halls with completely different lyrics that involves a lot of hashtags. Like, that's sort of the joke, is there's a lot of 'tis the season for hashtag gift giving. I don't know. It's dumb. It's terrible. I hate Old Navy for exactly this reason. I'm fine with this. And I've seen a couple different variants on it. All of them end the same. The final line she sings is hashtag sorry, not sorry. I am not so old a person that I don't know what hashtag sorry, not sorry means. Familiar with the term for when social decorum insists upon an apology, but you both do not feel the need to apologize, but in fact feel the need to make people know that you don't actually give a shit about it. Trish got really into it for a while. Whatever. It's a thing. I don't know what it means here. There is nothing in the commercial for which someone would feel sorry.
Well, I mean, you don't like the commercial, so maybe all you people who hate it.
All right, I might now just love that commercial. That might be my favorite commercial of all time, if that's what's happening. If the commercial is like, yeah, it's dumb. Fuck you. You remember Old Navy now, don't you? Like, if that's what's going on, then I'm here for it.
Okay.
If any of you have seen it and have theories as to what the fuck is happening, other than that one, which I don't feel like Old Navy is that smart, but I do like that idea. It is funny I say, oh, God. I had a recent experience of, like, strong awareness of my age. I was at my massage therapist the other day. This has been the week from hell. All of the appointments in the world have been this week. Mm. So my mental health therapist and my massage therapist and my dietitian and double podcast because of Thanksgiving next week. And I'm having lunch with a friend that I haven't had lunch with way too long, and there's just tons of things. Ugh, it's crazy. But so yesterday I have massage therapy, and I'm leaving the massage therapy room, and I hear the undeniable happy shriek of a child. Like when a child's having fun. Like, it was a shriek, but it wasn't bad. But there usually are no children in this place. It's a spa with like a chiropractor and shit, like it's not kids. Okay. So I go out to the front, and there is a small, I'm going to say 4-year-old, and I'm going to say boy, in bare feet, looking out the glass door to the outside world and just having a good old time. And I come out in my freaking hoodie, because 'tis the season, so now I'm wearing my hoodie, and I have the hood. I don't have the hood up at that point. I have a face mask because I still do that in a lot of places. And I come out, and he turns and he sees me, and I try and like smile, but I'm wearing the face mask, but I'm like, you know, I'm trying to be not scary. This is a thing that I work at. A, I like being not scary. And B, I am built such that I am often scary. He doesn't seem scared, which is great, but I don't want to, you know, push my luck here. So I turn and I go over to where I'm going to pay the bill and schedule my next thing, except the person's not there yet, which is not uncommon. They have to go clean up things, whatever. And I hear behind me a very tiny voice say loudly, "Who's that old guy?" And so I turned back around and I said, "Who is that old guy?" And I look, and in the waiting area where I can see his socks and his shoes that have clearly been taken off and left there, I see a woman who I assume is his mom poke her head around because we were not in eyesight, with just this big grin of relief that the person her child is just talking to like is clearly not bothered by this. And the little kid thinks it's hilarious. So he just keeps repeating it over and over. He's like, "Who's that old guy?" I'm like, "Who is that old guy?" I put the hood up. I'm like, "Who is that old guy?" But then eventually the person comes out and I pay the bill and all that. And he is doing other things. And as I'm leaving on my way out, I say, "Who is that old guy?" And he laughs. And as I shut the door and I hear it slowly closing behind me, I hear him say, "Bye-bye, old guy." And it was all adorable, but it was the first time ever, like, unironically, somebody has just called me, like, an old guy. And I was like, what the? I'm like, well, he's little, I'm big, and I do have a lot of gray hair going on. Realistically, I'm kind of an old guy now.
Kind of, so yeah.
That was interesting. Who's that old guy? Had a good time with it. Hello, everyone! Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that talks exclusively about small children and Jennifer Coolidge. Go back, it's been 12 years, all we talk about. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 607.
And is the first of a two-parter, because the next one will be the Thanksgiving episode, which you're all going to play for your families at Thanksgiving, round the dinner table. Sometime somebody's actually going to do that, and I cannot wait. It's the only reason I'm continuing this podcast.
I mean, this it is was a close one.
William almost killed the podcast earlier today forever, but I decided to show up. For those of you just joining us for the first time, we have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want. The hat magically on its own forwards the email to us. We read them, we talk about them, unless we don't feel like it, whatever. That's the show. Next week I'm not going to explain it again, because I never do on the second two-parters, because by that I'm just sick to death of mostly William, but also you all. So don't have expect it again then, but be prepared when you play this for your the Thanksgiving one for your family. Explain to them the premise of the show. Someday it'll happen. How was your week, dude?
It's lots of school, really. How about you?
Awful. Like I've said already. Just terrible. Busy, 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 busy. We did watch a few things, though, that I should probably talk about.
Let's hear about it.
First, we watched the first episode of She-Hulk.
Oh, you waited for it to be, like, done or whatever.
Yeah, and we have such a backlog of things, and we don't take them in order. We just do what we feel like. And mostly, I'm like, everybody's been talking about She-Hulk. There's a pitch meeting video for She-Hulk. I want to get it in earlier than later. And I'm also incredibly curious, because based almost solely on personal reviews, not things I read online or whatever, it was a very divisive show. Not just in that some people really liked it and some people really didn't. Also, some people thought it was really surprisingly feminist and other people thought it was really fairly misogynist. And I'm like, well, this is going to be interesting to see where I fall on this. And we've only watched the first episode so far. We will watch more. I assume we'll watch the whole thing. Neither of us really enjoyed the first episode, though. And I'm a little worried because according to somebody who didn't like it, they said the first episode's about as good as it gets, which I'm like, that's not a good sign. Traditionally, first episodes suck, which is part of the deal. But we were not pleased. You have seen it?
We haven't finished it yet.
Okay. But yeah, but basically. Oh, sorry.
I think there's only one or two left, but
okay.
We've watched most of them.
Basically, the first episode, the net result of the first episode is I now like the Bruce Banner character less. He's more of a dick than I had thought he was before. And that's sort of it. That's all I got really out of that. So that hasn't been fun, but we'll see what happens. We had somebody arrive who I did not expect to be in the show and who is listed in the main credits like early on, so I think might reoccur, which would be interesting, but we'll see. Whatever, we're gonna keep that. It's not that interesting. About, did you watch Andor?
No.
I think you should watch Andor. I haven't okay. watched Andor, but I think you should watch Andor, and what? I'll tell you why. Because who the hell wants to watch Andor? It's a show about a dude who was in one movie and died, and we all know it, and it wasn't, as much as I kind of liked it, it wasn't that great a movie, honestly, but whatever. So I heard, oh, Andor from Rogue One, they're making a show about him. And I'm like, really? Why? I don't care. Let's stop this conversation. But since then, everybody in the world who watches it, even people who are like, yeah, it's probably not going to be much, whatever, say it's fucking awesome. Like, I almost want to watch it, and I don't like Star Wars nearly as much as you do. So maybe you should check that out. But that is unrelated. We didn't watch any Andor, and still probably won't. But I watched some movies. Three movies in particular. Three movies. I'm trying to do them in ones that I have the least to say about to ones I have the most to say about. I think I'm going to start with... I watched the new Hellraiser. Trish didn't watch it with me. She thought she would not be into it, but I watched the new Hellraiser on Hulu. Have you seen this and forgotten to mention it? You don't have Hulu, do you?
Nope, we don't have Hulu. We know about it. I think if we could watch it, we probably would have by now.
I am a fan of the Hellraiser mythos. I have watched only a small number of the films. And only watched the first one multiple times. And I have been told by pretty much everyone in the world, including diehard Hellraiser fans, that after the third movie or so, they basically suck. And I mean, they've made 10 of them before this one.
Wow.
Because it really stops being about their story and more just like, let's do some really gross, gory stuff and then throw Pinhead in there every once in a while. But I've always been fascinated by the whole Cenobites and Leviathan. And I think that lore is very cool. I kind of want to read the book and stories upon which it was originally based. Clive Barker made stories and a novella called The Hellbound Heart that then inspired all this. But this is very much a reboot. They sort of changed some of the stuff a little bit. I had always planned to see it, but one thing that made me extra want to see it is the Hell Priest character, what everybody would know as Pinhead in the reboot, is played by Jamie Clayton, who is a trans woman actor who most people would know from Sense8. And I really like her. And I really liked her in Sense8, and I like her in everything I see. And I loved the idea of her as Pinhead. And in fact, I first found it out because they did a time-lapse thing of seeing her getting into the makeup for it, which was extensive. And so I was like, this would be cool. And I actually liked it quite a bit. Like, sort of more than I expected. It's, like I said, it doesn't necessarily follow all the same rules. It's kind of its own thing. It's nicely self-contained. Well-acted, very well-produced. 2 hours long and I didn't get bored. Pretty scary. I mean, not like gave me nightmares, but I'm like, you know, a lot of horror movies nowadays, like, I'm not the least bit scared ever at all. This one had some tense moments. And it does get pretty gory. It gets progressively more gory. I remember early on, I was like, wow, there's a lot less gore in this than I expected. And by the end, I was like, oh no, here we go. There's a lot of, because there's a lot of body horror and stuff. That's the nature of the Hellraiser movies. But I was pretty pleased. I would recommend it to people. So there you go.
Okay.
Last night, we watched Weird, the Al Yankovic story.
Oh, how was that? Roku.
I don't know. If I'm honest, Trish said, when I asked her what she thought, her words were, I kind of hated it. So, and I do understand why a person would say that. I'm genuinely not sure. I probably didn't like it in the sense that I'm not sure how I feel about it, but I feel like using the brain power to figure out how I felt about it isn't worth it. It's, and what I hate is the best term I can describe it with is, it's weird. Like, it's goofy as shit. It's, I mean, they keep plug. I mean, even at the beginning of this, Weird Al Yankovic himself came out, was like, you're about to see my absolutely 100% totally true biopic. And like, they make, but like, it's super not true. Like, famous people die that definitely have not died yet and things like that. Like, it's for reals not true, like hardcore. And it's a lot of parodying other biopics and musical biopics, but like in a real random sort of not connect, like it makes no sense. But it is quite funny in places, and there are some great sort of sections in it that did make me laugh. It is an insane cast. Like, have you ever heard of any actor? Because they're in this movie. Everybody's in this movie. A lot of them are just the tiniest of cameos. Like, fucking This Is Spinal Tap's Michael McKean is just an MC in a bar who, like, tells a band they have to come on and then like introduces the band and then is gone. That's his whole role in the movie, like shit like that. And it's a lot of celebrities playing previous celebrities. So like Rainn Wilson is Dr. Demento and Jack Black plays Wolfman Jack. And the dude who was Captain Polka Dot in the Suicide Squad, and I think maybe has been in a bunch of David Lynch stuff, plays the bassist from Queen. Weird things like this. And it was really fun because there's a party where there's a bunch of them, and so we're like, who's that, and we got Salvador Dali's there, and I'm like, who the hell's playing Salvador Dali? Can't figure it out. We'll have to look up later. And then I pause and I'm like, holy shit, I think that is Emo Phillips playing Salvador Dali, and my head just exploded. Like, that Emo Phillips playing Salvador Dali is the most absurdist thing I can think of in the unit. Like, my brain, my imagination cannot go more absurdist than that.
I mean, I could have been the one. I could have been the one playing Salvador Dali. What if you were watching and you saw, who's that person playing Salvador Dali, and you realized it was me? That'd blow your mind.
That would, but it wouldn't be as absurd. It would be just a standard, poor casting choice to save money that Hollywood does all the time. And I don't think Emo Phillips did a great job, but Emo Phillips is the most absurd person I can think of living today. Salvador Dali is the most absurd person I can think of from history. So it's just really amazing. But anyway, so yeah, it's just really weird. Like, and actually Evan Rachel Wood plays Madonna, and she does it so well because she's a major character in the movie. She does it so well that I was watching for quite a while and was like, I can't figure out who that is. And Trish looked it up and she's like, it's Evan Rachel Wood. And I was like, the fuck? And then I kept watching, and it wasn't till like three scenes later I saw her at just the right angle, and like she smiled, and just, I'm like, holy shit, that is her. And it's not like she's got like prosthetics or anything. She's just made up to look material girl era Madonna. but I don't know what it was. I just could not tell it was her until I finally could. I don't know. I genuinely don't. You got to watch it and decide for yourself. I mean, it's fucking free. Roku channel, whatever. But it's also 2 hours long, and you also can skip it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. It's weird. It's a very strange movie. Also, I understand now why it bears so much similarity to the fake trailer that was made years ago by Funny or Die for a Weird Al movie. They did a sketch that was a joke movie that looked remarkably similar to what this. Turns out Funny or Die was one of the production companies involved. Like they've been heavily involved. So, and Weird Al as a different character is also in the movie a whole lot. He's one of the record producers and he's in it quite a bit. There is actually this great scene where somebody else is chewing out Daniel Radcliffe's Weird Al and saying a lot of like very specific personal things about like his appearance and stuff while Weird Al as the other character is sitting there and eventually he's like, okay, that's enough. You can stop. And he's like, and your stupid glasses. And that, and he's like, all right. You can stop.
That's pretty funny.
It's way more violent than you would expect a Weird Al Yankovic biopic to be. I'm just gonna put that out there. I mean, I don't know how to give that context without major spoilers, but yeah, you know how violent you thought a Weird Al Yankovic pic would be? Like, not at all, basically. It's more than that. Noticeably more than that. Weird. It's a weird movie. That's our third movie, and it changed my life. No, it didn't. It didn't at all. But it's a very good movie, and I do recommend it. Although it is not currently so far out of theaters that you can just watch it on a stream. We had to pay like $6 to rent it or something. But we watched Bullet Train. You know about Bullet Train?
Yeah. It's not in theaters anymore though, right? I don't think so.
It was in theaters a while ago, and then when we flew out to Oregon, it was actually available on the like free entertainment thing. I could have watched it, but again, didn't have headphones and didn't want to watch it silently for the first time. So it's past the point where you'd have to buy it for $20. And now it's the point where you can rent it for $6 and then presumably before too long, it'll end up on, I don't know who the parent company was, but it'll end up on their streaming service. But we liked it a lot.
Who's again, in
it? Everybody. Like the entire cast of Weird, the Al Yankovic story is in. No, it's not. But it has Brad Pitt as the main character. Sandra Bullock as the person talking to him in his earpiece the whole time. Joey King, Ken Watanabe, the guy whose name I keep getting wrong, who's been in everything lately. He was in Eternals. He was Paperboy in Atlanta. Brian Tyree Gibson. I think those are the right names. They might not be in the right order, but he's in everything right now, and he's amazing. Another dude from Game of Thrones that I don't know, but all the rest of you probably would. There's two or three other really good ones, but they're surprises, so I don't want to spoil it. But, like, a lot of big names. And it's... Trish was trying to talk about it. She's like, it's kind of a crime movie. It's kind of a heist movie. And it's kind of a submarine movie, which are all genres that Trish really likes. Because it's basically different criminals board a Japanese bullet train with different agendas that conflict with each other and hijinks ensue. And they're all stuck on the bullet train. So, you know, kind of trapped when shit's going down and all this. And it's the way I said it at the time is it's everything I really like about Coen Brothers movies and Tarantino movies, which to be fair is not a ton. But it's none of the stuff I don't like about them, which is a lot. It's not grimdark. It's a very, I mean, don't get me wrong, it is a lighthearted, violent action. Like, it's, there is some definite violence in it. But it's a very, it's a comedy. I mean, it's very just sort of, it's got like snappy dialogue that's kind of fun, and then tons of big action heavy sequences, which are not dark and gritty. I think a lot of them probably used a lot of CGI. It's very violent. People definitely die, but it's not dark. It's not bleak. It's, it's just like exciting action. And lots of just cool lines, and everybody does super well with their acting because it's some great actors and they all have great chemistry together. It's just a fun time. It really is. They really nailed it there. So I would definitely recommend it. It's not a life-changing movie at all. It's popcorn fodder, but it was really entertaining. It also gave me a new appreciation for Joey King. Not that I disliked her before, but I hadn't seen her in a lot of stuff. But she has arguably the most complicated role in the movie, and it's very interesting to see. But yeah, great people in it. I really liked it. So check that one out, punks. So what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
I don't even know. I'm not going anywhere, I don't think.
You're not going to Des Moines?
Well, we were, I mean, as it's been going, as I mean, I think I've mentioned this several years in a row now. Like, Dad will go with his wife's family for Thanksgiving.
That's right. That's right.
And Scott has done that for years. I don't.
Scott goes to your dad's new wife's family for Thanksgiving?
To his wife's family for Thanksgiving. I can't remember if Scott has always done that since he got married, but there came a time where that, for some reason, it was just always Thanksgiving. I don't remember if that was a change that was made somehow, but whatever. Pretty soon we weren't seeing him for Thanksgiving, and we did that a few times. And then shortly after Dad got married, you know, and maybe the fact that Scott was already not coming for Thanksgiving had a little bit to do with it, but it just sort of got decided that we wouldn't do it. We wouldn't get together on Thanksgiving, probably just maybe the weekend following. But see, this year we're not getting together on the Saturday after. See, so they decided, well, why don't we do it the Saturday before Thanksgiving, which is this, as people are watching this, is this Saturday. Well, something happened with that. That didn't work out either, but we might on Saturday, just like, be meeting at a restaurant somewhere in Ankeny or something, getting together then, but not really going to anyone's house or spending time down at the farm or anything. So, but that's not even for sure. There's a chance that the whole Thanksgiving thing for us will just have to get skipped this year, and we'll get together on Christmas or something. Which,
well, and the weather definitely hasn't been participating this week. No, part of the reason this week sucks is this week is a preview of winter.
Yeah,
huge. And, it's so cold, and it's been basically snowing for like 3 days straight, and never enough to stick, but just constant little bits of snow.
Yeah, and the people are getting in accidents and stuff too. So,
and it's gonna be cold as shit on Saturday.
Well, that's part of the reason why there was a change in us doing anything else on Saturday besides like just going out somewhere. So, but I mean, it's happened before where we couldn't managed to get anything going for Thanksgiving, and we just basically everybody stayed home, skipped it, or did things with, like, my sister. She's got friends that she often does Thanksgiving with and stuff, so it's not that big a deal. If
what about
it doesn't happen,
you're gonna get together with Delmer and Bigger Delmer and Biggest Delmer?
Well, so
I can't bother to keep track of the parent names, but
I don't even know if I want to talk about this, it's so painful. So here we go.
You're kind of smiling, but your words, I'm confused.
You'll understand as soon as I tell you.
All right.
So since we're not going to the farm the Saturday after, that's definitely not going to happen. Well, the kids and the grandkid are coming over this Saturday after.
Okay.
But they have a plan for what they're going to do over here that I find, quite frankly, horrifying.
I'm excited now.
Can and they're going to come too? Over.
What are they going to do?
They're going to come over pretty early to do this. I don't mind the early thing, of course, but why they're coming early and what we're going to be doing for possibly 14, 15 hours. Watching all 7 Tremors movies. I don't know if I'm going to survive this. I might not come out on the other side.
Here's what I'm going to say. You and I have talked a lot about your views on things, and I respect how you're living your life, and I don't think you need to change anything. But what I will say is if you ever thought there was possibly going to be a day where you would try alcohol, going to be that day.
See, that's kind of what I was thinking. So when they
Oh my God. I wouldn't have even told you there were 7 at this point. I think I only know of 5 and I've seen like 2.
There's 7. And so when they first had this idea to come over,
I think even Michael Gross dropped out of it after like the 4th one.
Really?
He was the only continuing character.
Oh, that's
One of them in there is a prequel where like a bunch of cast members from previous movies play like their 19th century equivalents.
Yeah, one of them is in the Old West. Yeah. Well, I mean, I like Michael Gross, so
I also really like Michael Gross.
That can maybe carry me through a few of them. But when they first had this idea, they talked about it like everybody was in favor of this. I would say everyone was in favor of it except me, but everyone already talked about it without me because I think they knew already. Was gonna think. So the son-in-law comes to me and then everyone else is there too, but he says, we all decided we're gonna watch all 7, we're gonna come over here and watch all 7 Tremors movies. Bill, when do you think a good time would be to do that? And I said, well, I mean, I probably only have 20 good years left, so
yes. That is the correct. I was, as soon as he said, when would be a good time? I'm like, don't fuck this up. The answer is just after I die.
Just after I die.
So well done. Well done. I'm proud of you.
I even said, feel free, like at my funeral or whatever, just as a celebration, you can do it then. I would probably about 20, 25, maybe 25 to be safe, 25 years out.
The correct response. Well done.
But no, that's. It's not going to be after.
You could still die early instead. If you wanted to. You could die by next Saturday.
I think I will die because of next Saturday. I think it will happen while it's happening. I don't know. It'll probably be fine.
No, this is a fun game. This is we use this. All right, everybody, go to themagicaltalkinghat.com. And this is a good time because this is like a week and a half before. Because I would posit a very strong possibility. Y'all ain't going to manage all 7. That even the most hardened bad movie marathon supporters somewhere in the middle there are going to be like, let's just have some turkey and chat. It would be nice. Like, so we need to start getting a pool going. When do you think the clan is going to give up on this Tremors movie marathon? I suspect you'll make it through. Well, okay, someone will make it through 5. That I many. Don't think 6 and 7 are
that. Oh darn it! I don't want it to be that many.
No, I don't get me wrong. By around 3, it might just be Delmer surrounded by a pile of bodies. So,
I mean, I actually don't mind creature features. I mean, as we all know, I like the universal ones. I even like the new Godzilla movies and stuff. But like, there's nothing
and
about
the first
Tremors.
Tremors is a masterpiece.
Well, okay, so I'm kind of interested in seeing it as a piece of film lore. I do not expect that I'll like it, but I might find it interesting as like a, you know, piece of film lore. Kevin Bacon's in it and all that stuff.
It's clever. I mean, it's not particularly derivative for the time
for
it
the
was
time.
Made. Like, yeah, no.
But even people who like the movies and like who will write articles about these movies and stuff will admit that after the first one, they're just not, none of them like that. The second one, none of them are good after that. So it's like, terrible.
I think 3 and 4 were sci-fi original pictures, which for those of you not aware, is worse than a home movie. Like, it's better to have just been homemade in your backyard than to be a sci-fi original pictures. And that was then. I don't think the last ones even got the blessing of Sci-Fi Channel. Like, I think the last ones were like made with sock puppets in somebody's garage.
I think like, I'll find a way to like any of them that have Michael Gross in them because I like him. I just think he's funny.
And he's in a lot of them.
And I think I could maybe that might be my salvation that, but otherwise I think, oh man.
Yeah, no, you're going to, it's a rough time. You're going to have a rough time. I would be fine. I have no problem with the use of recreational drugs. I could not, would not, Sam I am, watch them sober. I would not watch, I don't know that I would watch all 7 not sober, but I definitely wouldn't do it sober. I don't think I'd watch 7 of any series like that, but especially not, you know, a bad one like that. That's a real bad one.
Well, they're used to watching, like, they'll watch, I think they'll watch all the Star Wars movies, all 9 of them, for something, for like New Year's or something. So, I mean, they're used to doing those really long, long ones.
Like back in the day when there was only like 4 or 5 of them, we did a marathon like that in college, and no, it had to have been when there was only 3 because I was in college, so Phantom Menace wasn't out yet. I don't think I even made it through all 3 of them.
Really?
Some people did, but I was like, well, I'd seen them before, and I was just like, it's late, my butt's numb. I'm a college kid. I'm a white affluent college kid. There's definitely more fun things I could be doing with my night. Man, that is rough. I
know. I have it here. I'll tell you. I've got it in my calendar.
I might have to be nice to you for the rest of this episode.
I've got it in my calendar. Let me tell you what I have in my calendar. So I'm looking at my calendar right now. And what? Nope. Did that wrong. Calendar. Okay. Oh, here it is. It's the 26th of November. And I have it labeled as Our Kids Hate Us Day. What it is.
I think that's accurate. Yep. But yeah, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and say when you think the last of the family will give up. I'm saying between 5 and 6.
I think Delmer's
you're welcome
gonna be,
to also pick that time, and then we just all will be smug at knowing we are right.
I think Delmer's also going to be helpful because he doesn't really like watching television. He won't sit and watch it.
He's a big Kevin Bacon fan, though, and so that's the first one. But that may be a thing. He might be annoyed because Kev Bakes doesn't show up again for the remaining 6. So
no, he likes to run around and do stuff. I mean, you can't. I mean, he won't even sit still to let you read a book to him or anything. So, you know, maybe I'll be chasing him around and stuff too much to be too bothered by.
Do you remember when you and I and Kirk, the unemployed men's club, went with his, at the time, like 1.5-year-old daughter and saw G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra in theaters?
No, we did that.
How do you not remember this?
Maybe it was traumatic or something.
This was one it? Of the, come on, we invented Cobra ice. Then, you know, because they had ice from the thing that sank instead of floating. It was just the worst movie. and his little girl just played on the floor because nobody else was there because it was like a fucking Tuesday for G.I. Joe The Rise of Cobra. So, like, nobody was there, and she just played on the floor, didn't even look up at the screen ever while the three of us watched. Like, I love that movie because it is so bad, and we experienced it in that way. How can you not remember this? At a certain point, we were like, you know, the three of us don't have jobs. We can sort of do whatever the hell we want. And we all went to see it because none of our significant others wanted to see it, but he still had the kid. So we took the kid, and the kid doesn't remember it. The kid is now in high school, and I've talked to the kid about it. The kid does not remember this at all. Although the whole family remembers Cobra Ice. That is a term that we came up with now because of the ridiculous one of that. I also like that that movie also had the experimental fighter jet that only worked with voice commands done in Gaelic.
I do not remember any of this. If someone asked me if I'd ever seen that movie, I would have told them no, because I don't remember anything about it.
Well, then here's the good news. You're probably going to forget five or six of the Tremors movies after you watch them. Okay. Probably. Have you seen any Tremors movies before?
No, I've never seen
any of them. Then I'm scared because you're way more ready for this to be torture than you, like, you don't even know.
Last time they were over, they had us watch this movie called Terrordactyl.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Really bad.
If you want to get them back, I still haven't watched it, but I have heard it is actually well worth watching. There's a movie out there from a couple years ago called Velocipaster.
No, they already know that one. They think we should see that.
I want to see that one. I've heard that one's really good.
That's what they say. It's really good.
I love watching that kind of shit, it's but not kind of seven stuff. Of them in a row. Yeah, but your wife does. You watch a lot of shit movies with.
Yeah.
Also, you may not have a thing about watching so bad they're good movies specifically, but I believe you've watched all the DCEU movies. So
yeah,
kind of the same thing.
not kind of. Not that bad.
I mean, you saw Suicide Squad. You saw Batman v Superman, Dawn of Bullshit.
Did you see the second Suicide Squad movie?
That's the only one I've seen.
And you liked
it? I haven't watched any of the others. But I watched the Suicide Squad, yes.
And you liked it?
Quite a bit, yeah. Did you?
No, didn't like it at all.
But did you like it? Did you dislike it more or less than the first one?
Not the same. Right. Not the same. I mean, I just don't think I like James Gunn or whatever.
That makes sense. It's he's definitely an acquired. And to be honest, I like the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, and I liked the Suicide Squad. I don't like most of his films. He has a weird love-hate thing with superheroes that I'm just like, this is a perfect collection of all the reasons I should stop watching superhero stuff.
He's not great with female characters either, really, is he?
I mean compared to just about every other white male director in the blockbuster category, I think.
Well, you know, he and some other guy are sort of co-leaders of DC Films with Warner Brothers. Now there's going to be a DC Films division or department or whatever. And he and this other guy are in charge of it now. So the new direction for DC Films is going to be charted partly by him.
He cut his teeth on trauma films and has made a couple of independent superhero movies in the past that sounded way too fucked up for me to see. So I mean, I get it, but yeah, I mean, I would agree his female characters are problematic, but again, except for films that tend to explicitly have female directors, I would say they're usually less problematic than most of the other films of that ilk that I've seen. I get not wanting to see it. Which probably means you shouldn't see Peacemaker.
No, I'm not that interested in Peacemaker. Most people I know have liked the second Suicide Squad movie and like Peacemaker also, but it's just not my thing.
Well, Peacemaker is a trick. Because Peacemaker is way more satirizing than you're led to believe up front. Like, it's not just we're being ironic. Like, the show Peacemaker is arguably about that piece of shit character figuring out he's a piece of shit character and learning to not be a piece of shit, which is not how I expected it to go. But again, it's a vibe. And if you really didn't like the Suicide Squad, you probably wouldn't really like Peacemaker, except the opening credits. The opening credits to Peacemaker are the best thing ever put to film. Kind of like the opening to Guardians of the Galaxy. James Gunn makes incredibly good opening credits sequences. You seen Black Adam yet?
No.
You gonna? I mean, it's DC.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see it, but I don't think we're gonna go to the theater to see it.
I think we might go for Wakanda Forever after the holidays on a weeknight. But I think I'm gonna have to break the seal because I really want to see Wakanda Forever soon. I'm very excited about that movie. But I am very curious about Black Adam. It's the first DC movie in a while that I'm like, I might want to see that. Because I don't really give a shit about Rock the Dwayne Johnson being Black Adam. But then I eventually figured out it's actually a movie about the fucking Justice Society with Pierce Brosnan and Aldous Hodge and somebody else in it also. And I was suddenly like, okay, this I'm more curious about. So,
yeah.
You seen the trailer for the fourth John Wick?
No.
I did. I don't. Trish is going to want to see it. I'm probably willing, but like.
You're not into the whole John Wick thing?
The first John Wick was a revelation.
Oh.
It was awesome. I loved the first one. And the second one I was very excited for. And then it didn't have two critical. Okay. We all know the first John Wick is about a badass retired assassin who's retired, but then some dumbasses kill his puppy dog. And he spends the whole movie murdering everyone because they killed his puppy dog. And I get how fucked up that is as a concept, but I also am an American living in this world. And so I was super behind murder all of these gangsters because that puppy was cute. By the second movie, we have lost that motivation. I remember walking out of the second one being like, I might be on the side of the people who aren't John Wick. Like, I'm not in favor of killing in general, but I'm like, I think he's the one who fucked up here. And the third one's even worse. And then the first movie also hinted at this really cool underground assassin society and their rules and their traditions. And then every movie since then has doubled down really hard on learning more and more about it. And it has made it stupider and stupider and make less and less sense. And also at this point, the plot to the fourth John Wick is going to be the same as the plot to the second one and the third one, which is to say, because of things that happened in the previous movie, everybody's trying to kill John Wick, but we're going to invent a MacGuffin thing that if he does it, then they'll have to stop killing him. And he goes and does it, and they have to stop killing him. But just before the end, we have to have him do something else, so they all want to kill him again to set up for the next. And so, like, I looked at the trailer, and I'm like, let's see, at the end of the third one, everybody was going to kill him. Okay, so this one, everybody wants to kill him, but there's a new thing we didn't know about involving the rules that he can do, and then he won't die. So great, he's going to do that. Like, I don't give a shit anymore. And the more I learn about it, the more it sucks. But the first John Wick is really turns a lot of action movie things on its head in a way that, and also just is fucking amazing fight choreography. It's hugely violent, but again, like, it's an Intuit one. Like, I'm all over the place. But then, yeah, second, third, fuck off. So, but yeah, Trish really wants to, so we might, I don't know. We'll see. You watch Over the Garden Wall yet, like I told you to?
No.
Watch it. It's good.
I've seen parts of it. We'll probably pick it up again.
Each episode gets weirder in ways that I really am digging. We are almost done. We got like two left. But
is Weird Al in it?
Not that I can tell, but there are a lot of celebrity voices hiding in the background. So it is hard. He is in a lot of things. He shows up in a lot of places. Apparently, he even showed up in the episode of the McElroy Brothers TV show. I only know this because Justin McElroy talked about going to a concert and his daughter being like, but you guys are friends. Can't you just go see him? And him having to explain that they've never actually met. He was in one episode and the scene he was in didn't involve that guy. And so they've never actually met. But his little kid is confused. He's like, you and Weird Al are friends.
I went to a Weird Al concert in Iowa City. And
did you?
It was loud, for one. But he does all these costume changes, you know. And I don't know how he did them so fast. I mean, like, you know, when he performed Fat or whatever, he was in the suit. When he performed, I mean, like, I'd never seen anyone do that before, and it was pretty amazing.
Something you should look it up online. If anybody go to YouTube and look up MBAM, my brother and me, Weird Al, you'll find it. And there's a section, and it's Justin McElroy talking about going to a Weird Al concert recently, like this year.
Hmm.
And unbeknownst to him, the whole tour is about them doing unpopular songs, none of his parody songs, and all just like deeply unpopular, like B-sides from old albums and things. Hmm. And apparently the whole room was just dead except for Justin, who was loving it because Justin got into it when he was really young, and it was back in the day where you just listen to the whole album. So like he knew all the songs and he was losing his mind, whereas everybody else was like, what the hell is happening? And it's just this is a very Weird Al thing to do. Like, oh, I got a new movie coming out soon. I'm going to take a tour where we deliberately play all the shit nobody cares about. And in fact, apparently he psyched him out because he's like, there is a new song from the upcoming movie and we'd love to play it for you. And then everybody got excited and then the lights came back and was like, but unfortunately the lawyers won't let us do it. So we're going to move on to
something else. He's got a lot of good original material himself. I mean, it's every album, it's not just parodies. I mean, they're all parodies in a way, but they're not all.
No. I mean, a lot of them are comedic songs otherwise, but yeah, he does a whole bunch of his own
like
stuff.
Nature Trail to Hell. I mean, if he could, he's got so many of those.
The entire soundtrack to UHF.
Yeah, he could just do a concert just with those things, and they're great. Like
I have to throw this out here. And honestly, the movie might be worth it just for seeing Daniel Radcliffe playing Weird Al. It's really amazing. But I guess spoilers for a subplot within the Weird Al Yankovic movie. There's a point in the movie. He's already big and famous and everything now, but he's decided he's not doing parody songs anymore. He's going to be an original artist and he's only going to do original stuff. And then yada, yada, yada. He ends up on a drug trip and he has an inspiration. He comes up with the whole cloth, this brand new song. And he plays it for the agents, everything. And he's like, this isn't, they're like, what is this parodying? He's like, not parodying anything. It's an original. This is 100% my own creation. The song in question you might've heard before is called Eat It. Later in the movie, somebody has the misfortune to inform him that Michael Jackson has recently released a parody of his song called Beat It. And he gets real mad. He's like, who does that? What the hell? And then later he's like, you know what? I'll bet some people, because they were close enough in time, are going to think my song is the parody of his song. And there's even a bit where he's like going to put on the jacket for a concert. And he's like, this is the Eat It jacket. It's that red leather jacket from both the Beat It video. And he's like, no, that's not mine anymore. That's Michael Jackson's jacket. Now I can't wear that. I refuse to do that. And it just becomes this whole deal. There's stuff that's the good stuff. There's a lot of stuff like that within the movie. There's a lot of, like, obviously this isn't how it worked. Isn't it funny if it would have? Like, there's a lot of that, but that one in particular cracks me up. All right, let's do a thing. I forgot to get the questions out, so you do it. We've only got like two, right?
Yeah, I think we just have two.
Wow. Okay, we can only do one now because we're going to need to save one. All right, what do we got?
Jazz wants to know.
What does Jazz want to know?
Besides John also, Williams.
Jazz has been listening to this podcast for too long. Last week, like 3 hours or so after I put the podcast up, I get a personal email from her saying, are you doing okay? I just watched the podcast and it seemed like you were having... I was like, really? And I was having a very bad time. But I thought I covered it pretty nicely, or at least as well as I ever do. But she just saw and she's like, something seemed wrong. So then she and I had a very nice talk about our mental health things and stuff like that. But I thought that was hilarious that it's at the point she's like, yeah, watch the podcast. You seemed a little off. So it's very sweet, but also very weird and amusing to me. Okay, go ahead.
Are you sure?
I mean, we'll see what my mouth does.
Well, the subject line is the sound of movies. She says, besides John Williams, who do you think are some of the great movie soundtrack composers? Best soundtracks and why?
All right. I mean, pre-Inception, Hans Zimmer, of course. To be fair, since Inception, all I can associate Hans Zimmer's work with is because they did it in Inception and then every other movie trailer in the history of the world. You know who Danny think actually...
Danny Elfman really had a good. Really good run there for a long time. I mean...
Who?
Danny Elfman. Batman and Edward Scissorhands and just all the stuff he did. It was really good. But I think after a while, people felt like they were hearing the same thing. And you actually get that a little with John Williams too, but you don't mind with him. But with Danny Elfman, it got a little tired, I think.
You know, it's fascinating. If you replace the word hearing with seeing and the words Danny Elfman with, I lost his name suddenly. Tim Burton. The sentence you said could be exactly the same. He had a really good run back in the day with things like Edward Scissorhands and Batman. But at a certain point, I feel like everybody just felt like they were seeing the same thing.
Yeah, I think that's true.
It's all people, of a piece.
Yeah, I think people finally got tired of
both of them.
Yeah, I think so.
But I mean, they come in a package. So
yeah,
nowadays it's Johnny Depp, similar. Tim Burton movies are the only thing that ever made me sick of Helena Bonham Carter, and that shouldn't be possible because Helena Bonham Carter is amazing to look at and even more amazing to watch perform. She's a very attractive woman who can act her way into like other dimensions and shit, but she just kept getting this white pancake makeup on her in all these Tim Burton movies, and I just stopped giving a shit about Helena Bonham Carter, which is terrible.
She's good in Enola Holmes, if you watch that.
Yeah, there is a problem in that the rest of the movie kind of sucks. And actually, her character kind of sucks. Her performance is good, but her character also kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
Did you watch the second one? The second one's out.
Yeah, I watched them both.
How was the second one?
All right.
Same.
Yeah, I mean, I think Millie Bobby Brown is very talented, and I like watching her, and I really thought all the performances were pretty good, but it's not like it's Agreed. A great story or anything. It's just...
It's not a story that holds together well. It's not a story that gives us sympathetic characters particularly well.
But, I mean, it's fun to watch people, good actors, like, really... who are really crafting their performance. It's kind of fun to watch that. And you see...
I would agree when they're trying really hard. The problem is, in this era of big budget Netflix action movies that we're getting, you get these amazing actors and they don't really try it. I mean,
I think,
offense, but I refuse to believe Ryan Reynolds, Gal Gadot, and Rock the Dwayne Johnson were really giving it their all in Red Notice.
Red Notice
to me is the ur example of just all of these fucking movies.
Like Millie Bobby Brown in the second movie, I really got a sense that she was really kind of finding, I don't know. It seemed like she was stretching herself a little bit more in the second one than the first one. And, you know, she started as a young actor, obviously. So this is, I always find it interesting when you get to know an actor when they're quite young and you see how they kind of change how they do things and their approach to things. That's kind of fun to watch. Like Freddie Highmore, isn't that his name? The kid that was in. Well, anyway, he was a little kid when he started, real little. And, you know, he was in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and he was in that thing that Johnny Depp was in about the Peter Pan thing. I mean, he was in a lot of things when he was real little. And so when you see him in this TV stuff he's been doing, including Bates Motel.
There's a thing where he's a doctor. I don't
know. Yeah. On the spectrum, I think he's supposed to be.
Okay.
Autistic, but you know, you see the choices he's making and the way he's matured as an actor. That's really interesting and fun to see. You know, and then some kids, when they get older and they become adults, they can't act at all. And you're like, how did this kid was acting? This wasn't an accident. They were really acting. And now as an adult, they seem not to know how to do that.
Well, here's the thing. There are a lot of actors out there who are really good at a role. Hmm. And that can be fine. You can have a long storied career playing that role. However, when that role is that of a child, you got an expiration date.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So that's what I'm guessing is happening. Because there are plenty of actors out there that are like big movie stars and shit. And you're like, I think they basically played the same character in every movie. And actually, we've just been dealing with this right now. Ron Funches, a comedic actor we love. We loved him as a stand-up. We love him in everything he's in. He basically just plays himself.
Yeah.
Who is witty and charming as fuck. So we'll watch him in anything. But he doesn't exactly have a big range.
No. But look at Daniel Radcliffe. Here's an example of someone who was a child actor. You saw him grow up in one role on screen. And it's like he knows that, if I'm going to get away from this, I've got to pick some really out there roles that are really going to make me stretch and show some range. And I think he's done that.
And I think that's not an uncommon tactic for child stars.
Yeah.
Doing it successfully is less common. Because there are a much larger number of actors who are really good at one thing than there are like great actors. And I think Daniel Radcliffe is a great actor.
Well, I do too.
I have now seen him in a few enough disparate things, and he nails it every time. But he went hard in the paint. He went from Harry Potter to that fucking Equus stage play. Like, he was like, we are not thinking of me as a child actor anymore.
But I mean, his co-stars has fared as well. And
I think Emma Watson's kicked ass. Rupert Grint has struggled. Tom Felton has also struggled a bit. But I think Emma Watson's nailed it pretty well.
I mean, yeah, I've liked her in the things I've seen, but there's not a lot of variety. Passing a lot of range.
Yeah. Maybe not. I haven't seen enough of her other projects. I just know she's doing stuff. Rupert Grint is fun when you get to see him. He's picked a lot of things that are sort of low profile, like shows that you don't know exist. He's got one on Netflix. He's got one on Crackle. From like
he's on,
but nobody's heard of them.
He's in the Servant. Oh yeah,
he's in the Servant also,
playing an American.
Yeah,
he does a good American accent, and his acting is good. He is good in it.
And he was in a heist show on, I think, on Crackle. And he had this weird comedy thing on Netflix called Sick Day or something, where I think he was pretending to be ill. I don't know. It was a whole deal. And I think he's good. But also, yeah, I just don't think he's had enough opportunity. Same thing with Tom Felton. It's always tricky going from kid actor to grown-up actor.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Macaulay Culkin essentially face-planted hard on that. And Macaulay Culkin's still a good actor. But he did not make the right first choices coming out of the gate there, and it just didn't work.
And what's his name from Sixth Sense? He was in Forrest Gump, too. He was in a few things. What's his name?
I mean, I think his issue was puberty hit, and he was no longer what Hollywood thought was cute. And that was a problem.
Now, he has been in some things lately. Yes,
but he's cast in a very different direction now. Then, and again, in the Hollywood's version of ugly sort of casting.
I don't know why I can't remember his name.
Haley Joel Osment.
Ah, yeah.
Sorry, I didn't catch that. You couldn't
remember. But he was, but the things I've seen him in recently, he's good in. I mean, he's obviously still
he does a great job
or whatever. But
and again, same with Macaulay Culkin. Like now that he's sort of gotten past it, I think it probably helps. And I've noticed this with the actors from Friends and the actors of Big Bang Theory. It doesn't necessarily result in them doing well, but when you've been in a thing like Harry Potter or Friends or Big Bang Theory, you don't ever have to work again. You've made enough money that if you wanted to, you never had to work again, which I have to imagine gives you a little bit more comfort and lack of anxiety when picking projects. It's been kind of fascinating. Daniel Radcliffe has been sort of fascinating, the variety of things he's done. And some of them have not been good, but he's always been good.
Well, like the kids from Stranger Things, like, you know, the kid, I don't remember the actor's name, he played Will. But he was probably the best child actor of the whole group, and I've seen him doing nothing else.
Yeah.
While Finn,
I think his name Finn Wolfhard, is that his name? Yeah.
He's in everything, which he's okay, but I've never.
He's the lucky rabbit's foot of movies now.
Yeah.
If you've got a movie with young people in it, he has to be one of them.
Which he does a fine job, but I wouldn't say he's the best of the pack.
I don't know what it is, but people rub his belly for luck or something. I mean, he's just he gets shoehorned into things sometimes.
Yeah.
No, people fucking love Finn Wolfhard, and I don't dislike him, but I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I feel about it.
All right, back to Monster Names question. I do have one I want to mention, because there is one that I think, although they had a pretty storied career eventually, it was sort of discreet, and I don't think it got enough credit. Jack Horner. Jack Horner makes some amazing soundtracks. And in fact, there are some real, real shitty movies out of the 70s with some real, real good soundtracks. In the same orchestral vein a la John Williams. And in fact, Jack Horner did the soundtracks to a lot of Star Wars knockoffs. Battle Beyond the Stars, Krull. I'm trying to think of a couple others. They have really good soundtracks. And you can say, I mean, Krull is one of the greatest movies of all time, but I know a lot of you don't agree with that. But you can't deny the soundtrack is really great. Same thing, Battle Beyond the Stars is a ridiculous movie, but it's got a really good soundtrack. I like a lot of his stuff. I am enjoying a lot more. You're getting, Randy Edelman did a lot of good soundtracks that I used to listen to. Some of my favorite movies in the 90s. He scored Come See the Paradise. I listened to that soundtrack into the ground, and he did that one. I like a lot of the more collaborative ones that are going on now. Enter the Spider-Verse. Absolutely killer soundtrack. I've listened to that thing over and over. And it's all hip hop, but it's all different artists, including a lot of artists I'd never heard before. And like Black Panther. Black Panther's soundtrack is good and was done by a particular guy, but Kendrick Lamar put together that sort of concept album soundtrack for it, and it's really good. So a lot of the stuff nowadays, I'm liking the more collaborative work, and again, the more modern work, the less orchestral stuff. But yeah, Randy Edelman and Jack Horner stand out for me as before. I'll tell you who I'm tired of, and I mean, sad for him, but whatever. Randy Newman. You know, maybe he's a fucking musical genius. Whatever. It's been a long time since I've heard a new song from him that I'm like, this sounds like every other song I've heard from him. My brother loves him. My brother gave me a CD of him that I still haven't listened to, mostly because I don't have anything to play a CD, but whatever. I don't know. I'm over him.
Some of his Pixar scores are pretty good, though.
Yeah, but even then, I was like, I'm happy.
Didn't
enough.
Stuart Copeland do some things?
Yeah. I think.
I don't remember. You know, one time I was listening to, or I was cycling through radio stations, and I hit a classical station that sounded like the soundtrack to a Roadrunner cartoon. So I listened to it. I'm like, this is awesome. And it went on for about, I don't know, 5 minutes or so. And at the end, you know, when you're listening to a classical station, at the end, you have this really soft voice tell you who the composer was and all this stuff. And it was to a Roadrunner cartoon. They played a piece from a Roadrunner cartoon.
It's in there.
Here's the thing. I don't know who composed them or if it was like it's probably a variety of people, but cartoon soundtracks and some cartoons, especially the classic Warner Brothers cartoons, are really good. They really truly are good. I mean, you know, sometimes they're using the symphonic instrumentation for sound effects and things. I mean, it's incredibly creative and composed stuff.
And let's also add, to be totally honest here, The Barber of Seville only has the level of, I'm not saying it wasn't a well-respected classic piece of opera, but like the mainstream familiarity with it is 100% Kill the Wabbit, Kill the Wabbit with my sword. Well,
what's opera
helmet.
Doc? Yeah.
And yeah. It's huge. And so much that, cause you said like it was a soundtrack to a Roadrunner. And I'm like, I bet I'd recognize it. I couldn't tell you right now, but I'm like, yeah, they all had orchestral scores that my brain didn't even register, but was definitely absorbing.
Well, yeah, but then you hear things and I don't know what precise instrumentation this is, but there'll be a little bit of silence and you'll hear a blink, blink, and that's someone blinking. I mean, that's what... going on. You know, maybe Wile E. Coyote was in midair and he would blink twice and then he'd fall.
But you didn't register it as instrumental until you heard it outside of the cartoon. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it was so cool. But I don't know. And there are some of the, you know, when I think of great soundtrack pieces that stick in my mind, a lot of them are from Warner Brothers cartoons.
But
like, you know, the witch is sharpening the axe, you know, all that's like, yeah,
Appalachian Spring is only in there because of that. Well, I got that in my head all the time, and that's
true too. Other actual classical pieces get worked in.
Yes, we do have to go because we have a whole another one of these to record, and I have so much shit I still have to do today. But before I go, there are some rules to soundtracks now. There are certain things you're no longer allowed to put in the soundtracks, which is to say specific covers of specific songs. Because 8 million of them have been done, and the last 7 million all sound the same. And they are, first and foremost on my list, Mad World by Tears for Fears. Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears, and Creep by Prince and Radiohead. I think Prince wrote it, but it's mostly famous. Stop it. Everybody, stop doing these. Like, you will not come up with a cover that is both different than all the other covers and worth listening to. It's just not going to happen. There was something the other day, and I heard some, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, 14-year-old girl breathily saying, "All around your familiar." And I was like, get the fuck out. Like, I don't even remember what show it was, but I was tempted to stop watching the TV show because I'm just like, we're done with this now.
I'll bet we're done.
Don't like it. All right. If you'd like to learn more about any of the topics today, I don't know, Google's a thing. Also, go to the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com. Tell us when William's eyes will start bleeding during the Tremors marathon. Tell us what you're going to do for Thanksgiving, hypothetically. Next week, you can tell us what you actually did. And listen again next week and just put all your family, gather around the Bluetooth speaker next week to listen to our lovely, wholesome Turkey Day show.
If this were a real show, right after we sign off, it would be me singing that song. People could listen to.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.